Hello and welcome to Beauty Inside Out, where I share my experiences, insights, and knowledge of health, beauty, and wellness, as well as interview pioneers within the industry on a variety of topics. I am your host, Kimberly Snyder. I love to discuss topics that are on my mind and in my heart. So joining me in the conversation every week is my dear friend, Tony, or as I like to call him, T. Tony was my co-host on my previous podcast, and he's back to join me for these topical weekly segments. Hey, T, welcome back.
Welcome. Thank you.
Well, I'm really excited about our topic today, which is the sugar versus fat debate, because this is a huge, huge topic that's been raging for decades, right? And yes. Nowadays, we often hear the phrase, fat doesn't make you fat.
Yes.
Right? But the reality is that you can gain weight from too much fat, the wrong fats, which we're going to dive into today in the research. It is true that sugar, refined carbs, the effect on insulin is very problematic for some. But what is sometimes talked about, but not often, is the deadly combination of fat and sugar together, which is something I've been talking about since the Beauty Detox Foods, right? And one of the, people are so scared of eating fruit. They're so scared of eating any sugar at all. But we often see it, and this is also talked about in What the Health. There's a relationship between fat and sugar, which is why in What the Health, Dr. Neil Bernard talks about diabetes isn't just a disease of sugar. It's actually a disease related to fat. And when we look at the foods that people are eating, the fried donuts, like all these different things that have sugar in them, they also have these fats. And the fat and the sugar together is a very big reason that people gain weight.
Yes.
So let's dive into this. Is interesting. Let's talk about the refuting the idea that fat can't make you fat or fat doesn't make you fat, which is we hear that over and over again today. People talk about that in their their paleo-esque, Atkins-esque. I mean, it's kind of an old adage since Atkins has been kind of using that phrase.
Yes. Yeah. And I think just some background, because you and I both have had some similarities on our path to this point. And we were both, raw foodists for a period of time before we kind of went to a more balanced place and perspective. And one of the things though, I first saw this kind of in the raw food context where the diet, a lot of times people would, fruit is a very obviously prominent part of the raw food diet, but then also fat is also a really, really prominent part of the raw food diet. Like there's avocados, oils, there's nuts. And all of a sudden, the challenge was is that when, people would be eating a lot of both and they would be starting to have a lot of issues. And then you had some side saying, no, eat more fruit, lower the fat. And then other people were like, no, fat's great. Like cut out the fruit. And there was this fight amongst different schools within the movement. And the thing is that and I think as you evolved and you shifted, you realize a lot of people do need healthy, while you can, sometimes it makes sense to go lower, carbohydrate for periods. Like if you have candida or you have things in general for optimum health, people need a degree of carbohydrates for optimal brain functioning,
yes,
for energy, for all these things. And so then that means in order to get, to basically to have the presence of healthy amounts of carbohydrates in their diet, they can't go crazy on fat and just be eating unlimited avocados and nuts and oils and all these things and not run into issues. So it's there's a mindfulness mm-hmm. about fat levels that kind of started to emerge for you, I think, and for people
yes.
that started to see this.
Yes, exactly. And so you're right, T. I tried this in my own body though. When I've tried to eat the other way, which is no carbs and just lots of fat and having oil, and that's the way that some people eat now. I thought I was going to go crazy. Like I could handle it for a few weeks, but then I just started to feel really imbalanced because, like you said, T. Like our bodies, like our brains, like we do need some carbohydrates. And people talk about, oh, it's not the fat. They focus on the carbs. They focus on the insulin, which we know is a fat storing hormone. But then there's also other fat storing hormones. There's research. There's some really interesting. There's one study that Dr. Joel Fuhrman talked about where they would do a biopsy on the fat of a woman's hip. They did like a biopsy of it, and they could see what came from olive oil, what came from like pork fat. Fat can convert to body fat very quickly. It can very quickly be absorbed. So this whole idea like fat doesn't make you fat really isn't true.
Yes.
Like everything has to be looked at,
yes,
you know, from a more holistic standpoint.
Yes. And I think to kind of continue the progression here, it's like fat, the challenge is that fat and sugar and carbohydrates, there's a degree of competitiveness between them in the body. So when you have when you're eating a lot of fat, your blood tends to be a little bit stickier, which then that when you then have carbohydrates come in, the carbohydrates just don't get processed as efficiently, which then creates...
It blocks the channels where like the absorption points are. So it keeps it in your system, right? Like in your blood.
Exactly. And then that requires more insulin to actually get the carbohydrates out of your blood. And so that's part of what makes it problematic on a physiological level and how those two things like, they work against each other when you're consuming a lot of like, and this is just something that like you see, it's a big thing that we have to overcome culturally because, you know, like bread and butter and cake and carb up pizza, like these are really, you know, sandwich, all these things, they're like the combination of high carbs and high fat is so prominent in the Western diet that it's something that we are like programmed to actually like consume a lot of them together, and it just creates a lot of issues because you get that competitive thing in the body.
Yeah, exactly. And like if you were to eat a bunch of oil, you know, fat is the least satiating and it's actually the most calorie dense of all the macronutrients. If you combine fat with protein, it can feel filling and heavy, but then also very heavy digestion wise. But fat on its own, like if you just eat a bunch of oil, like it's not satiating in that way. So again, back to the idea of satiation, as we've always talked about in Beauty Detox, it's important to eat high fiber foods that actually fill your body but are easy to digest. So there's less of a digestive load. So we're not saying not to eat any fat, not to eat carbs. Like we always say to have balance. And you've talked about, you know, things like cakes and like, you know, like some of the more obvious combinations, like cookies that have fat and sugar. But, you know, in Beauty Detox, we say you can, you know, cook with coconut oil. You can use avocado. You can still have quinoa. But, you know, some oil, but less so, more like the fiber-rich foods. And there's also the natural food combining principles where you're not having like very fatty nuts, for instance, with carby like rice, right? That's just bad food combining. So the food combining principles actually help you separate a lot of the time the really high fat foods with the carby foods. Yes. And then when you are having fats, like, you know, for instance, in the power protein smoothie, if you're having a fatty hemp milk with chia seeds, you're not having that with your carbs, right? So there's some natural separation in Beauty Detox.
Yes. Yeah. And I think you brought up a moment ago, like a really, really important point that I don't want to gloss over too much because I think it's so important for everybody. A lot of times we come to this point in Beauty Detox and, you know, our livers have been very compromised from eating a particular way. And so there's not,
great point.
You know, they're not already in the best condition. And fat is so energy intensive on a digestive level, particularly for the liver and the gallbladder, that when you're just pounding like oils and nuts and all, you know, avocados and all these things, even if you're, you know, I think that's one of the things that really people struggle with energy on these kind of like, you know, low carb, whether it's ketogenic or some of these other plans, is because their livers are not in the position to be processing like all this fat efficiently. And it just gets so bogged down. It requires so much energy. Like they say, the liver is like one of the master organs in the body. And so when it's having to just like process and metabolize and secrete all of this bile over and over again, and it just can't, and it runs out of available bile. And then all of a sudden it's like, you've got to like go like lay down and take a nap from like all the, all the fat.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It's just exhausting, right? For your body. And you know, there's a survey done in the United States that found like a lot, like, and you know, I don't want, there's like a range of numbers, but let's say like up to a few pounds of undigested food in the stomachs of study participants, just from like foods that are sitting there. And, you know, our organs have become sluggish for one. And also the combinations are just so much work for the body. It just can't digest it that quickly. So it sits there for a long time, which leads to bloating, which is something I experienced for years, like poor digestion and bloating. And it was when I started to understand these different principles around food combining and, you know, just natural ways to boost digestion and to, you know, lessen the load on the liver, lessen the load on the GI tract. It really does help to optimize your body and to optimize weight loss and just health in general.
Yeah, 1,000%. And I think one thing just to, that we'd, I think would be good to cover before we finish this segment is, because a lot of people are going to be wondering, okay, so what is balance? What is optimum? We're not saying give up carbs. We're not saying give up fat. But then how do people know what's a good kind of range, you know, you know, like on a percentage basis of fat, but then also even on a, you know, translating that percentage basis to like, okay, does that mean like a little bit of nuts, a little bit of avocado, maybe a tiny bit of coconut oil? Like how, let's get like just a little bit more practical to kind of round out this.
Yeah, exactly. So we're saying that it's better for your body to separate the carbs and the fat as much as possible. So sure. we always sort of veer away from hard and fast numbers, tea and BD detox, because there's that, you know, the differentiation for each person, you know, genetic constitution, just different body types, different metabolisms, different activity levels, so on and so forth. I'll say in general, though, we say an avocado, you know, no more than one generally for the average person, like an avocado and maybe like a handful of seeds and nuts, some coconut oil, would be, you know, an adequate amount of fat. And I also do recommend taking the DHA EPA supplement. I take it almost every day myself, which is the essential fats. It's from algae. So it's like a vegan sort of version of fish oil that doesn't have, you know, the contaminants and the potential rancidity issues that come from fish oil. So, you know, when I look at my diet tea, I have an avocado and I have chia seeds and hemp milk in my power protein smoothie, which I have in the afternoon. And then, you know, sometimes I have coconut oil that I cook with and, you know, a little, some here and there, but I'm not going out of my way to eat tremendous amounts of fat. I'm not putting, you know, pure coconut oil or butter in my coffee. I'm not drinking coffee, but I'm not adding it in specifically. Sure. Right.
Yeah.
And so when I look at like my diet, that's sort of like what I do. Now, T, you, I think you have a little bit more fat in your diet. So can you?
Yeah, elaborate? I think
maybe about the same.
Yeah. I think in an optimal sense, I mean, I think sometimes like I've definitely like overdone. I mean, I'm also just a testament to kind of what we're saying here, where I've overdone fat at times.
Yes.
And then I've gotten like a lot of carbohydrate cravings, and then I end up combining too much of them and I put on weight. Or, you know, I've, you know, had times where like, even when I was doing extreme exercise and I really wasn't getting leaner, is because I was like craving, I was eating a lot of fat, but then I was craving the carbs to like replenish kind of what I was losing in exercise. And so I've experienced this. So I think it's also, this is coming from experience, but I think for me too, it's, you know, again, like you said, everybody's different, but for me too, what kind of you're talking about with yourself is really also optimum, you know, is optimum for me, where, you know, I'm probably shouldn't be, although I have at different times, I probably shouldn't be having like three avocados and oil and nuts and all these things. It's really being more moderate. And maybe, I mean, the percentage, it's, you know, it's hard to really know, but I think like when we've done research before, we've looked at it, you know, maybe 25% of calories from fat is like a good kind of general marker. Maybe somebody could be a little bit more, somebody could be less if they're more sensitive.
It could be like, you know, there's countries like China where some people have 10% and they're really healthy. I think, you know, 15 to 25% is sort of like a broad range. The average American, I believe, has like 30 to 35.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
So a little high in our, you know, in our sort of balanced perspective, seeing that carbohydrates, we want them in the diet so you can't have too much fat. Then there's some advocates that say 70% fat, which to me is like not a sustainable diet, because then I'm just living off vegetables and like fat, basically, and like some protein, and it's just not satisfying to me. And I feel like, what am I going to eat? Like, what am I going to cook? Like, this is not fun. I don't know what to do.
Yes. So, and your liver is getting like so tired from just like metabolizing fat all day long, every day. And you're just, oh, you know, it's
exactly.
Yeah.
So like, as far as carbs, you know, again, and we have specific plans and programs. You guys can look back in Beauty Detox Solutions, see the, you know, and the Beauty Detox foods, like sample plans. We have the meal program. We have the roadmap that is available, I believe, now. If it was taken down, we only had it up for 7 days. It's going to, it'll come back at some point, but there's lots of different resources for looking at sample meal planning. But I'll just share with you guys right now what my typical day is, you know, I have a ton of vegetables, as you know, which counts for carbohydrates, you know, glowing green smoothie, whole foods, fruit. I also have a gluten-free wrap pretty much every day. I have an avocado and sprout wrap that I have mid-morning. I'm really hungry when I get back from yoga, and I'm still nursing Bubby. So I have that. And I also have, you know, I have some brown rice or quinoa. I still have grains in my diet, legumes, you know, I just kind of mix and match tea. It's not like I measure the exact amount, but yes. Again, back to this percentage, like it's pretty balanced. I have some fat. I have some carbohydrates. I definitely get enough protein when you add it all up. I also have a power protein smoothie, which is isolated away. The fat in there, it's like in the mid-afternoon, like it's away from when I'm eating, you know, if I have rice at dinner or whatever. So it's just, when you follow the program, it becomes easy. And again, with the food combining principles, it's just a natural way of separating out the fat and the carbs, so you don't have to worry about it as much.
Yes. No, I think that's amazing advice. And I think it's like simplifies it again. You know, I think numbers can be so limiting and confusing. I think just it's, you get to start to get like in what you're talking about and where the point you're at, whereas you just get an intuitive sense. Okay, you know, I can have some, but let's not, you know, just not overdo it. And then, you know, if you overdo it, you start to get sluggish or you feel heavier.
Mm-hmm. You see yourself gaining weight.
Yes.
The answer is not to cut out all carbs. The answer is not to cut out all fat. The answer is to not have them so much together at the same time, and maybe to have, you know, make sure you're eating the healthiest fats and the healthiest carbs. And, you know, again, we're going to have some research in the show notes about this, but I will just say, T, by again, virtue of following Beauty Detox, these principles are virtually taken care of for you. And that plus, you know, building your gut health, like these are some of the reasons I feel like it's been so easy for me to really maintain my ideal weight without ever having to obsess or like overthink it. It's just sort of naturally built into the program.
Yes. Amazing.
Yeah. So check out the show notes if you guys are interested in reading more. I also talk about this combining of sugars and fats in Beauty Detox Foods, which is my second book. And there's also some great blogs that we have on this as well. We'll link to those in the show notes. So thank you so much, T, for all this great info. Thank you, Beauty, so much for tuning in. Stay right where you are. We will be right back right after the break. Around the turn of the century, the introduction of pesticides, herbicides, and other chemicals into food processing quickly diminished the farm-to-table ingestion of raw fruits and vegetables, which contain life-sustaining organisms known as SBOs. Now we need these beneficial bacteria more than ever. And it's why many of our community members opt to subscribe to our monthly discounted option.
because they realize that Beauty Detox probiotics are one of the few supplements we need as long as we're not living and eating in the wild. Sign up for your subscription today at shop.kimberlysnyder.com.
Hey, beauties, welcome back for a very special interview I have for you today. I have Andy Molinsky, who's a professor of organizational behavior and psychology at Brandeis University and author of the book Reach, a new strategy to help you step outside your comfort zone. So, Andy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
And I know that you write for Harvard Business Review, Inc., The Economist, The New York Times, The Boston Globe. You have a lot of impressive publications you've been part of. And this whole idea around stepping outside our comfort zone is something that really speaks to me. I'm sure it's going to speak to all our listeners because it's something that we all struggle with. You know, it seems like it's easy to kind of go through the same habitual patterns, and we like what we know, what we trust. So how, I mean, you have a whole book on this, but what are some sort of top line thoughts on how we can even start to approach stepping outside our comfort zone when it seems so scary?
Yeah, no, it's true. And, you know, I got into writing the book because, I mean, I'm a business and psychology professor, but I have struggled my whole life stepping outside my comfort zone, you know, whether it was networking or, you know, even like participating in class as a kid in college. It was so terrifying for me, or speaking up at meetings, or actually for the first few years of my career giving speeches. It was, you know, really hard for me to step outside my comfort zone. So yeah, a couple of top line thoughts. I mean, I think you need to, I don't think everyone in every situation at every point in their life wants to go run out and rush out and jump outside their comfort zones. You want to be selective.
Maybe one area of your life to start.
Exactly. I think that in the book, I talk about the book's basically arranged in terms of like the why is it hard? I identify kind of five key roadblocks people experience. I talk about how we avoid doing it, what our key sort of avoidance strategies are. And people often, I think, can see themselves in these. And then the meat of the book is about what you can do about it. How to, you know, what I learned from all the research I did about how to successfully, you know, take that leap and step outside your comfort zone.
Well, I see that, you know, one of the things you talk about in your book is the three C's: clarity, conviction, and customization. So in the first one, clarity, is, do you mean by that just being really clear in what we would want, like what the reward would be for stepping outside, taking a risk, going for a job or a relationship that we want, or trying a different diet, or in our community, we would say trying to, you know, really go into the beauty detox lifestyle. Is that what you mean, clarity, just knowing what you're after?
Well, not quite, but that's, I think that's very important. So the three C's are basically like, if we cut to the chase here and get right to the solutions about how to do it, what clarity is it's the idea that oftentimes when we're considering trying something that's outside our comfort zone, we get scared. Mm-hmm. And fear takes hold of us, and we start to fixate and focus on the worst case, like the worst case scenario. I guess, you know, imagine you're considering public speaking, and you know the worst case scenario might be like fainting on stage. I guess dying might be the worst case, but like, you know, fainting on stage, making a complete fool of yourself. And right. I think oftentimes, whatever the situation is, oftentimes we sort of fixate on that worst case, and almost like in our minds, you know, imagine that the probability of that's actually really high. We're able to sort of capture that middle ground approach, you know, not the idealized best case scenario either, but somewhere in between the two. So with speaking, it might be, you know, I'm not going to be the best TED talker in the world, you know, the first time out, and I'm probably also not going to faint on stage and make a fool of myself. You know, I'll be somewhere in between, and that's okay, and I'll learn, and so on and so forth. But I think having, it's sort of like the idea of an emotional anchor, and that's what clarity is. And I found that to be important for people when they were learning or considering stepping outside their comfort zone.
That's so great, and I never thought of it looking at that way, like an anchor, because a lot of us are scared of trying something if we're not going to be good at it. You know, for instance, I know a lot of people say to me, oh, I'm not flexible, so I'm not going to be good at yoga.
right? So they don't even want to try doing it as if they're going to get on the mat and suddenly be able to like do this crazy handstand or even like this really deep back bend. And I say, well, you know, it's not really about that. Like just, you know, show up, focus on your breath, just like getting them into seeing it's not as daunting as we sometimes think it is, or we don't have the same expectations. You know, we put these expectations on ourselves that sometimes can be so, so intense.
Oh yeah. I remember I actually lived in Los Angeles for a couple of years in the early, early 2000s. And I started to do yoga, and I had never done it in my life before. Now this was about 15, 16 years ago. So yoga was popular, but not as popular as it is today, I guess. And I remember I was kind of scared to do it. I thought that especially like hot yoga, I literally thought I was gonna faint. Like I didn't think I could make it through a session, or I didn't think my body would be flexible enough. I was afraid I was gonna pull something or whatever it was. Like I was fixating on these sort of letting my emotions sort of like kind of hijack my more reasoned thinking. And that's essentially what clarity is one of the three C's I talk about.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I know you talk about in the book is global dexterity. Can you tell a little bit? I have no idea what that means, Andy, but it sounds really fascinating and it's something we all need to know about. Can you explain a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. No, global dexterity is actually not in this book, Reach, but global dexterity is my first book. There's an important connection actually. So I wrote Global Dexterity in 2013. It's about adapting and adjusting your behavior across cultures, almost like, you know, like being flexible across cultures, just like we're talking about yoga. And what was interesting and what kind of inspired me from writing Global Dexterity was people wrote to me or, you know, talked to me when I gave talks and so on and so forth and said, you know what, these ideas of stepping outside your cultural comfort zone, which global dexterity was about, these are applicable beyond just crossing like national cultures. These are applicable in everyday lives. And that was part of what inspired me to write this book, Reach. So there is a connection, but they're different books.
It's true. Culturally, and also just being around people or working with different people that may think a little bit differently from us, or we're raised in a different way, or, you know, something we talk a lot about in our community here, Andy, is, you know, as we change our diet, we become healthier, having people challenge that, or you know, they're used to eating a certain way, and how we navigate that, how we can stay, you know, true and strong to ourselves, and still be in these situations and feel good about it. And the other people can feel good as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the other C's that I talk about. So I have clarity. A second one is conviction. And that's sort of what you're talking about there. The idea that, you know, when you're stepping outside your comfort zone, in some ways you're going against the grain, right? You know, you're like every bone in your body, psychologically speaking at least, is kind of telling you to go one way, which is probably to avoid it. But you're saying, no, I'm not going to avoid it. I'm going to do it. And so conviction is really key. And what conviction is a sense of purpose, you know, almost giving yourself psychological permission to do something outside your comfort zone. It's not going to erase your discomfort, but it will give you that power to fight through your discomfort. It's, you know, and it might be maybe your source of conviction is that this is the right thing for me to do now in my life, or this is the necessary thing for me to do, or I want to be a good role model for my kids, or whatever it is. You know, every one of us has a source of conviction within us when we're considering a change. So, you know, find it, embrace it. It's a real source of power that you have.
And, you know, Andy, I like how you kept saying this is the right thing for me, or this is necessary for me. And that's what we talk about here as well, is not trying to get in some sort of debate with someone else of like, this is right, this is wrong, like widespread. This is like very personal. Like, this is what I'm doing. I feel better doing it. I've made this decision for myself. This is how I'm going to eat, or this is how I'm going to live, instead of, you know, trying to prove to someone on someone else's journey. You know what I mean? I feel like we dissipate a lot of energy doing that, but just focusing on our path and our personal convictions.
Absolutely. It's a good way to put it.
So tell us just a little bit about the last one, Andy, since we talked about the first two, the customization. Give us a little hint what that means.
Yeah, so customization is a third piece. This is probably like one of the most exciting things I found in my research. It was so cool. So what I found here is that when people stepped outside their comfort zone, they quickly realized there was no one-size-fits-all version of it. You can customize it, kind of like you buy a dress or you buy a pair of pants or whatever it is, and you go to the tailor to have it adjusted a little bit so it fits you just right. That's a metaphor, and you can apply that same metaphor to stepping outside your comfort zone. So people would do little tweaks. They would sort of make whatever it was their own. So they might change their body language. They might bring props to a situation that made them feel comfortable or successful, like a power suit or a lucky ring. People might play with timing. If they were uncomfortable at a networking event, they might go early and customize it that way so that it would be less noisy and stressful. I heard from someone who wrote me an email actually fairly recently who read the book Reach and really liked it. And she said, yeah, I customized too. And she said, you know, I used to be afraid of making small talk at parties. And her customization was she had this brilliant idea to bring a selfie stick to like social get-togethers. Like she liked photography and it was a perfect prop or tool for her, because before that she was kind of just sitting in the corner not saying much, but now she had this thing and people kept coming up to her and said, what is that? And they would say, oh yeah, that's a selfie stick. Oh, how does that work? And all of a sudden it would catalyze these conversations, and she never, and then it led to, you know, some relationships and so on. And it just, she never had that before. That's an example of customization. The point is that there are many, many, many things you can do to make a situation your version of it, your own. And that's really powerful when stepping outside your comfort zone.
Wow. Well, and Andy, I'd love to hear from you. What's an example of something, could be recent, could be a little bit more, more in the distant past, of when you personally stepped outside of your comfort zone and the payoffs? Was it, you know, maybe writing this book or something that happened to you in business or in life?
Constantly, you know, in terms of professionally, speaking, I 20 years ago, I was terrified to speak in public. I remember getting, invitations from companies to come speak because I was a professor at the University of Southern California in LA, and they were inviting me to come speak at their company, and I would just freeze. I wouldn't know what to do, and I was just terrified. I didn't know what to say. I felt like an imposter and so on. You know, fast forward 20 years now, I'm very comfortable speaking. I love speaking. I gave a TED talk. I speak at companies a lot and so on. And so that's a big transformation. All sorts of things, you know, both in my personal and in my professional life, I find that I've had to step outside my comfort zone to achieve goals I wanted to achieve, and I think that's true for all of us.
Yeah, when you say constantly, do you feel like once you sort of get into the flow and you get under your belt some of these tools that you're talking about in Reach, it almost becomes a way of life? Like you see an obstacle or you see a block, you see, okay, I've gotten comfortable here, but I need to get past it. So you're kind of always sort of pushing the boundaries.
I think you're right. But it depends. And this sort of gets back to something you mentioned earlier, which was you really want to have to do it. I mean, it has to be something that, you know, you really care about, you know, that you have you really want to be healthy in your case, for instance, or you really want to make an impact in the world. That's been a driver for me. Like I've always wanted to, you know, by training, I'm an academic and a researcher, but I wanted to impact the world beyond just that. And so that's been a real driver for me. But to do that, I've had to step outside my comfort zone in so many different ways. And so, you know, I think you're right that it's, in some ways it's like learning a language. You learn one language, and in what you're actually learning is not only that language, but you're learning a process of how to learn a language.
You know, like myself, I'm a recovering perfectionist, Andy. So like always like doing more and being driven versus now I can authentically, you know, just sit back and say, you know, what do I authentically want to create? Or, you know, what is the next project that really speaks to me? And then pushing past the comfort zone as it relates to that. So really having that why behind it, I think, is important too.
Absolutely. And having it be something that's like driven from within you, you know, it's an inside job.
That's right. And, you know, it comes from this purpose, like you said, I know this idea of impact, of wanting to create change. Do you, you know, you talk about this idea of purpose, and do you think that it's important for all of us to be connected to our purpose in choosing what we're going to, you know, push the boundaries on, or where we're going to really put energy as far as pushing our comfort zones?
Yeah, but I think that purpose, you know, differs for all of us, and yes. it also differs across our lifespan too. You know, I think, you know, when you're younger, maybe that sense of purpose is about achieving something. It might be about making a difference in the world. It might be about helping people. Maybe if you end up having kids, your sense of purpose might shift a little bit, where it's not just about you, it's about others. Maybe that's your orientation from the beginning. Maybe you're very relationally oriented. I think that, you know, for different people, that sense of purpose differs, but that's what I mean by conviction, you know, that you have that there's a reason why you're doing this, and that you can really locate that and embrace it and hold it and use that as fuel.
Amazing. And like you said, that power comes from within, and that's how we can keep going and pushing when obstacles come up, or we have to be creative and think through different situations. It really does have to be rooted from the inside. We can't just get it from, you know, outside or because other people want us to do something. Otherwise, it's just not going to be as strong, is it?
I think in many cases that's true, or at least it won't have the same lasting power.
The sustainability.
Yeah.
Well, Andy, thank you so much for being with us today. This is all really fascinating. I love hearing about your research and all your ideas. And, you know, I can't wait to read your book, too.
Well, thanks. It was really fun to be on. And, you know, anyone listening, if you want to connect, I have a website with lots of, you know, articles and videos and all sorts of stuff on it. Would you mind if I mention that to your listeners?
Oh, please, Andy. And everyone, will also link to this in our show notes as well.
Oh, perfect. So yeah, so I'm www.andymolinsky.com, AndyMolinsky.com. And yeah, I love to hear from people. We can connect on social media, which by the way is another area where I've had to step outside my comfort zone. You know, like, you know, in the past, I only started really being on social media about 5 years ago. And, you know, now it's a major part of my life and I love to connect with people. So I encourage you.
Well, and thank you. And Andy, and everyone, I want to remind everyone of Andy's book, which again is called Reach, A New Strategy to Help You Step Outside Your Comfort Zone. And we will also directly link to Reach in the show notes. So again, Andy, thank you so much. We so enjoyed having you.
Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Okay, beauties, it's time for our tip of the week. Purchase a diffuser and try using essential oils to uplift your mood. I have done a few podcasts on essential oils, and I really believe in their benefits. Be sure to check out my blogs and podcasts to find out more about why I love them. Okay, beauties, I will be back with you on Thursday for my Q&A session show, where I answer questions from the Beauty Detox community. To submit your question, please go to KimberlySnyder.com/AskKimberly. Thanks so much and see you again soon. And always remember, progress, not perfection, as true beauty comes from the inside out.